This is the Volleyball Coaching Wizards podcast, covering everything coaching, motivated and inspired by interviews and conversations with some of the world's great volleyball coaches. To learn more about the project, visit volleyballcoachingwizards.com. Now here are your hosts, John Foreman and Mark Levigieu.
Welcome to episode 9 of the podcast. In this show, we take a look at the philosophy of putting together a training plan or a practice plan. And as our kind of starting off point, we use a clip from Belgian coach Jan de Brandt, which talks about his philosophy and how he approaches things, specifically in terms of the perhaps contrary idea of actually looking to find ways to cut down on the amount of time you spend in training as opposed to trying to fill your full available training slot. So I think, or at least I hope, that you find the discussion rather interesting and maybe it gives you some thoughts for your own practice planning. All right, enjoy.
How has your training methodology changed over time? Maybe how a training session is different or the same as when you began coaching to now?
Well, I can say to you, and I'm really proud, that I never gave the same training in my life. The concept was there, but I always change something in the exercises, something in the order of organization. What is really important for me, and that I developed by all the years, is the organization of the training. I don't like that players have to wait. Mm-hmm. For example, in a row of attack, I always try to find an organization where nobody is waiting longer than 5 to 10 seconds, not more. It's impossible. So that means that my trainings are more intense. And this is what I like also. It's about intensity. I prefer to train 1 hour and a half with good intensity, with a good focus, with a good physical charge, than to make really long trainings. It depends, of course, on the group you are, because I'm also training long time with youth players when you have to develop techniques. But also there, I think you can find a way to reduce the time of practice, but to give always higher quality. I like that a player, when he's using or when he's learning technique, he's executing 5 times, but very good, then to repeat 100 times and 50 are bad. Yep. So I think you have to give them really well the image from the first time.
Yep.
It's like this I want. And you are only going to do like this. And there you develop, like in the practice, I say always, the first 45 minutes of practice, I'm going to be a dictator. Sorry for the word, but you have to do the things like I want that you do the things. Because I'm convinced that this technique can be good for you. And there are a lot of ways to learn a technique. But when I see you now with your physical abilities, your posture, I think this technique is the best for you. Mm-hmm. So please, do it always. When you do just pepper, put your feet right, open well in the shoulder. Those are small details, but you do this every time. And then you are going to develop a good technique. If you one time you put your right foot in front, or you are attacking just with the elbow or whatever, oh, it's fun, but you are never going to learn the good technique. So that's what I want to say. I prefer to give them the right image and a good image from the beginning. Then you don't have to train so much. I prefer to train, for example, 3 times 1 hour a day, or 2 times 1 hour and 45 minutes, but always at a very high quality. And only, I know also, only perfect practice makes a perfect play. So why don't you do that from the beginning? I am a setter, and it's maybe one of my biggest points when I start with a team, and I look them how they are setting, and I am vomiting. I am vomiting because they cannot set a ball. And then I explain them, okay, this is my technique, but I know I was a setter for so many years. I know it's a good technique. The balls will not slip through your hands if you do this. And please, I tell you, it's so important in this tie-break system. Everybody after a defense is responsible for setting. And this will make the difference between a good team and an average team, is that everybody can set the ball very well.
Yes.
High ball to the spots, high spots on the net or to the back row, the pipe, but it's a quality set. So I teach them to set. And this was from the youth, because I coached all my life through, I coached the youth.
Mm-hmm.
To the top level, the highest level. When I was coaching Gamova, also in Fenerbahce, come on, but the Russians, they know how to set.
Yeah.
The Russians have those techniques. I didn't have to correct her a lot, but there were other players, like star players,
yeah,
who can even set a ball. So I started with that all the time. So please, pay attention to it. It's crucial. I'm going to be a dictator on you in the first part. The second part, I am the training. I am more a creator. I am going to invent exercises where I can develop the creativity of a player. And I like, for example, a lot of open exercises who are not always related directly in a three contact game. Okay, we can put five contacts or six contacts, and then we can take or develop a player on the technical side because he has more time to prepare his action, and we develop also on the tactical side because we have a little bit more time to analyze. And afterwards, you go back to the normal three contact game. And there, okay, I like to see how my players are dealing with the exercise.
Mark, I know this is something that is near and dear to your heart, so why don't you take the lead?
Yeah, I it is a topic that's of interest to me because I think that coaches, as a general rule, are always trying to figure out ways to practice more and to fit in extra sessions, to do extra drills, to train for longer, to get in all of the things that they need. And I think a really well-structured practice, and obviously a game-oriented practice, can cover every part of the game in a relatively short period of time. So I often think about the days when we used to practice for 8 hours a day. So it was always in the 70s and 80s, okay, we practice 6 hours a day, 8 hours a day. The Russians are doing it. The Japanese are doing it. And I know, because I lived through it, that we were doing long practice sessions. But I can't for the life of me remember what we could possibly have spent our time doing that was related or remotely related to the game of volleyball. And when Jan came up with that line, as you say, it was something that resonated with me.
Oh, I can't disagree with you. I mean, think about all the conditioning work that used to get done in the old days, and even not so old days. I think eventually we did get to the point where coaches started to realize that when we shifted from side out scoring to rally scoring, that the conditioning element, all the heavy aerobic work and all the sprint work and all that stuff that they were doing all the time in training, wasn't as necessary, especially if you structured your practice properly and made the conditioning just playing. You know, the conditioning is built into what you're doing. And more specifically, it's the right kind of conditioning. It's not just go out and run. Although I do still occasionally see teams running laps, which always amuses me or horrifies me, whichever my mood is that particular day.
If we talk specifically about physical preparation, the scientific model that came through the 60s, 70s, 80s was like a building block approach to physical development. So you have an aerobic base, and then you do strength, and then you do I forget all the steps along the way, but you go through the steps, and I think to a large degree that was a way that we always thought about practicing volleyball too. So you firstly build bricks before you start building a wall. So it's not even a building block approach, like in building a wall. So we wasted a lot of time just going through those individual things that we just didn't need to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, going back to the still persistent view of some coaches that they need to use all the time available to them, however much that is, do you think part of that is a function of bad prioritization when it comes to developing the plan?
I think that planning is a really huge element of it. So planning and thinking before about what you're trying to achieve in not just a single practice, but in a longer period of practice. I think that's definitely part of it. I think part of it is also tied to the idea of reps and reps and reps and reps. So the maximum number of reps is the optimal type of practice, and I don't accept that thesis. I don't accept the thesis that the maximum number of reps is automatically the best response. I think that the idea of practice and the philosophy of practice has to be to get the best repetitions inside the practice environment, the ones that are the most effective, the ones that give the greatest amount of transfer. And if you pay attention to any of the trainings that you've ever done, there's a point in the practice that it serves no purpose anymore, where the players are not focused on the work, they're going through the motions, and the coach is still counting the reps because you need to do 100 reps or 1,000 reps or 50,000 reps or whatever the number is, but the players are not engaged in the process anymore, and they haven't been for the last 45 minutes. So I don't think that period of practice is useful, except that the coach can tick a box and say, okay, we did the reps, it's not my responsibility anymore.
Right. How much time do you normally take planning a training session?
less time than the textbook says that I should. because I remember reading things when I was studying that you should spend at least as much time planning practice as the practice takes. So maybe that was a John Wooden quote or something somewhere else. And if you have 14 different drills and you're planning practice down to the minute, then I can imagine that you need to spend a couple of hours, 3 hours preparing the practice. But if you have a game-oriented kind of work, then the number of drill or the drills don't take very long to work out, and the most time spent in practice is working out the matchups and the rotations, so that inside the work, the players have enough of the quality repetitions.
Yeah, I was just going to actually say that. For me, I basically take as long to train, to schedule a practice, or to structure a training as I give myself to do it, which is both good and bad. I learned that if I started working on the training plan 2 hours before training, it would take me 2 hours to actually finish the plan. Whereas when I realized what was going on, I said, okay, it's 30 minutes before training. I'm going to write this down, and I know I need to leave in 15 minutes. So it kind of gets you fixated on what you need to be doing, and not letting your thoughts wander all over the place as to what would be nice and what's the upcoming opposition and, you know, where are we in the table and all this other stuff that really isn't necessarily relevant to what you're doing, you know, and also thinking about the umpteen different possibilities and options you might try to squeeze in when in the final analysis you're going to do four things and you just need to pick four things. And as you say, for me, the longest amount of time gets dedicated to rotations or matchups or whatever in the game-like stuff that I'm doing. So I could try to get my best hitters going against my best blockers, or my best defenders going against my best attackers, depending on what I'm trying to focus on that day.
Or making sure that everybody gets a chance to serve, or that you get to pick one. Often enough, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, in my case right now, I've got a starting setter who's got a back problem, so I try to minimize the number of jumps that she does in training.
Mm-hmm.
So she tends to do mainly back row rotations while she's in there. I can't have her not do front row rotations because she needs to work on her blocking as well. And I need her as a good block going against my best outside hitter. Mm-hmm. So that they both get that training. But I have to have that consideration of, okay, it's still relatively early in the season. Her back isn't going to get any better soon because she's just not going to be able to get enough rest to do it. So we have to moderate things. But yeah, I agree. I've heard the you should take as much time planning as you will in execution. But I would actually contend that part of that process is kind of the processing and the thinking that you do following the prior match or the prior training, or even before that, as you say, when you're kind of forward planning how you're going to structure things over a week or over, you know, a series of training sessions and not just on that single one.
I agree with you, but I suspect that the initial statement or the initial advice to coaches is not to include all of the general thinking time, but the specific time sitting to plan.
I'm going to believe the other thing because then I can fit.
So what you're what you were talking about there, I know that this is actually one of those funny little laws. It's called Parkinson's law.
Yeah.
Parkinson's law, that work expands to fill the allotted time.
Exactly.
Or work contracts to fit the allotted time.
Right.
That's or right. If you wait until the last minute, it only takes a minute to do.
I've actually found that some of my best training plans have come as I've been standing in the gym going, okay, we've got these players. All right, I got 2 minutes. All right, done. Here we go. I mean, unfortunately or fortunately, I had to get really good at doing that when I was coaching at Exeter, because for the first year, I never knew from training to training who was going to turn up or how many. So I literally had to sit there, okay, as they're warming up, we're going to do this and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. unfortunately, I could never plan ahead. That was the big issue.
Yeah.
You know, anytime I wanted to plan ahead, I'd, you know, get to that day and suddenly I wouldn't have any players that I needed. Oh, you want to work on middle quicks? We don't have any middles? All right, let's go rethink that plan.
I had this similar thing working in a club team in Australia where we had was coaching two teams from the same club, so different leagues, and on one court with six balls, I think. And I had an open door policy, so we could be and no penalties for not being in practice. So most guys came nearly all the time, but it could be anything from 10 to, I think the record was 23 on one court.
No, yeah. I had an issue, a situation like that when I was coaching the Devon ladies, where we had a certain number who were in the squad for sure, and then we had guests, regular guests, but they weren't generally expected to be part of the team come match day.
Yeah.
And so it was always a challenge of trying to work on team stuff when you had players who weren't actually part of the team. And I didn't have the issue of, you know, 23 showing up. I had the issue of six showing up and going, and half of them weren't part of the team. And you're going, okay, we're supposed to do what? You know, and then it just becomes general skills acquisition training. And you're only training once a week, so how many general skills are you going to acquire? Like, no, we're supposed to be developing teamwork here, team stuff. But I don't have a team. Anyway, but circling back to the priorities thing that I brought up before, I do think that one of the issues coaches get into, both in terms of over-developing plans and in terms of how they manage things while they're in training, is they don't have certain things that they're specifically focused on, and only a few of them, three tops. And as a result, they're trying to do everything. They're trying to fit in service. They're trying to fit in serving. They're trying to fit in defense. They're trying to fit in hitting. And they think they can prioritize all of those things equally all the time, which you just can't do. You can't do it as a coach. Players can't do it as players.
You cannot do it. No. That's correct.
And I remember at Exeter on occasions, I had an assistant coach my second year there, and he would point something out in the middle of a training session of a drill or a game or whatever, and saying so-and-so is doing this or we're not doing this. And if it wasn't the priority that day, I'd have to tell him, listen, I know that's one of those things, you file it, write it down for look at later, but you focus on the things that are your priorities for that day. Because otherwise, you can get really sidetracked.
Volleyball is a pretty complex activity. It's very easy to get sidetracked.
Yeah, for sure.
And the reality is that if you prioritize one thing or focus on one thing or one or two things, then by definition, other things get paid less attention to and fall by the wayside.
Right. So, you do have to be aware of not leaving something important or semi-important for too long a period of time before you circle back around to it.
Yeah. We actually just came through a period. We had a week and I wanted to focus on a normal week. So just one match in a week instead of two. Mm-hmm. I wanted to focus on side out because it was at our side out level had dropped off, and that's been our focus for the last 2 weeks. But we've side out has gone through the roof. Better reception, better side out efficiency, better first ball side out. But at the same time, our point scoring has dropped right off the same cliff that the side out climbed. So.
So we know what your priority is going to be in the next couple of weeks.
the priority is to refine the balance. So we have a game on Saturday, so we don't have much possibility to find the balance between now and Saturday. But but we have a full week next week, and that'll be the work,
right?
To deprioritize, but deprioritize.
All right, let me ask you a question, kind of going back to the idea of having excessive repetition based drills that don't really achieve a heck of a lot.
Mm-hmm.
One of the challenges that I've had, and I've had it with this team, I've had it with prior teams, when I've tried to shift them to more of a game oriented approach, is that the players resist it. They think they need the reps. So I'm guessing you've probably seen the same thing along the way as well. So how do you overcome that?
It's definitely the case that players often think they need X number of repetitions to be able to be ready to play. My favorite story on that was working with a team, and on the last practice before the last match of the season, at the end of practice, the setter and the opposite hit another 10 balls together because they hadn't had enough reps on that day before the game tomorrow. So they were in their mid-20s. They'd played juniors together. They'd literally played together for over 10 years. As I said, it was the last practice before the last match of the season, so 6 months together practicing every day, and they thought they needed 5 extra balls on that last day to be ready for the game. And part of it is a conditioning, is mental conditioning, I think, but also it's often a crutch that the players have. That everybody has, a coach has it as well, and that's how it gets to the players, that we have to have X number of repetitions. We need to receive 50 more float serves, and then I'll be ready for the game. So it's the most common one that I see. And there's in volleyball, in life, there are fights that you need to have and fights that you don't need to have. And so you serve 50 extra balls after practice because the libero needs to feel good about himself before the game.
Yeah, and I was going to bring that up because you and I have talked about pepper and things like that during pregame warmups and its value or lack of value, and how you at a certain point you have to differentiate between training and just mental preparation, and mental preparation being more or less whatever that player needs to do to get their head on straight before they compete.
Yeah. Definitely. This is a common theme or an overarching theme that I have, is that there are lots of things that you do in practice. There are lots of drills that you do, that you should do, that you can do, that really nothing to do with getting better at playing volleyball. And or at least not getting better at the things that they're supposed to be getting better at. Pepper is a perfect example. It has zero value for volleyball. I can't think of anything that it's really good at, except that because it has the maximum number of balls for the minimum number of players that you can play volleyball, it provides an effective warm-up, and you kind of do everything that you need to do in a volleyball match without jumping, and so it has a value in that instance. But the problem that you can have with pepper particularly is if you think that it's a practice for defense, or that it somehow improves somebody's ability to play defense, which is just frankly ridiculous idea. So you can do all of these things, all the 50 serves to the libero at the end of practice. It's not having him, it's not improving his reception ability. It's just an exercise of mental focus and preparing you know, psychologically for the work ahead, but except in some really specific instances, it does nothing for getting better at playing volleyball.
Right. Let me ask you this. Have you ever had an experience where you've done what we would, I guess, call block or something similar to block training, reps, and seen the team's performance get worse?
Oh, I wouldn't have said so. Well, unless you want to say that in the last 2 weeks, when all the work has been on side out, our transition attack and has got worse. So,
well, that's perhaps a lack of training or lack of training focus oriented. I'm actually referring to a situation where, and I can't equivocally say this is the cause, but it was kind of, for me, it was a semi-experiment, although mm-hmm. I didn't tell the players this at the time, because at a certain point, and this goes back to what I was saying about the players wanting reps, they were pushing on me to do more drill, more block type stuff. And I mm-hmm. told them from the beginning that, you know, my focus is on game stuff, and because of the transfer, you know, and I gave them all the reasons, of course, but, you know, emotionally, reasons and logic don't really play together. No. So I, you know, I started to put in, because we needed to be better at just technically digging the ball. We were not doing a very good job of digging balls that were coming to us.
Mm-hmm.
So I started incorporating some specific digging drills into it, partly as an experiment for me to see what would happen, and partly to kind of, you know, give them that warm, you know, fuzzy feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And we did it for a couple of weeks, and I talked to them afterwards, and I said, you know, we're not any better. And actually, I think we're playing worse defense right now overall than we were before we started doing these drills.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they kind of got it. I'm not saying they necessarily bought it, but I think they did realize that our defense wasn't getting any better, at least.
Yeah.
Despite all these reps of digging these balls. So, you know, maybe a little bit of a breakthrough there. But again, who knows?
Volleyball's such a complex game, and it's all about the interactions. The whole game of volleyball is a series of interactions. Nothing except the serve can exist by itself without what happens before and after. And if you take anything away from that context, then you have to lose something. I don't think there's any way you can avoid losing something.
Yeah. And I will say that since we've stopped doing that, because we haven't done in a couple of weeks, done any real pure digging drills, I've had him do a little bit of stuff just to get him to step properly toward the ball.
Mm-hmm.
But most of our work has been in games, set up situations, and let's work on digging this ball that we're trying to channel cross court, or digging the line attack, or whatever. And we have gotten better overall defensively. Overall, again, it's a complex thing. It's we're working on a block, so if your block is getting better, then it makes it easier for the defense and all that stuff combined.
Yep.
And they haven't pushed to do more digging reps, so. So maybe progress, baby steps in the right direction.
That is good news.
Yes. All right, we're just about, we're probably a little bit long on time. Any final thoughts?
I think that we've covered that idea pretty well. So you can always practice better in less time.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. For show notes and more, visit volleyballcoachingwizards.com/podcast. Got an idea for a future episode or want to ask a question? Send an email to podcast@volleyballcoachingwizards.com.